Today I would like to particularly concentrate on the Old Testament reading from the prophecy of Isaiah. I think this word is very timely, and I pray that it would speak to you and speak to me, and particularly in the time that we are in, a very timely word. Isaiah is one of the greatest prophets of the Old Testament. And this happened about 740 BC, so you're talking about 2,080 years ago, so that's quite a long time. Let's paint a background of what was happening in the time of Isaiah. The national and international developments during Isaiah's time provide the essential background to his message, beautiful message. Israel's northern kingdom was imploding, crumbling down due to internal struggle and revolutions. And eventually, the northern kingdom succumbed to the Assyrians. Later, several decades later, the Assyrians marched towards the south, and 200,000 Jews were made captive and then taken into exile to Babylon. Now, someone may ask, are there things we can learn from an event that took place nearly 3,000 years ago? Well, not much really has changed in human history. If there were wars then, we have wars today. Wars are wars. Nation trying to dominate another, trying to control another, trying to bully another. Nations are trying to seek for, world power, to be dominant in the world that we live in. Yes, instead of catapults and bows and arrows, today we have weapons of mass destruction. But if you would really look at it, things have not changed that much. Maybe ancient wisdom can bring light to the modern world we live in, that we can draw some wisdom from what had happened in the past. If we were in their situation, and perhaps one of the exiles in Babylon, we will have a litany of questions, such as, why hasn't God, the God of Israel, come to our rescue? Why did God allow these things to happen? Does God really love us? Can he really provide and take care of us as he promised? Can he protect us from our enemies? Has God abandoned us? Or is God angry at us? And if he's angry, how long is he going to be angry at us? These words were enunciated in the book of Psalms. Let us add another detail. Israel was surrounded by pagan kingdoms that did not worship the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. They were polytheistic. Going back to Isaiah, Isaiah's contemporaries and those in exile had succumbed to the worship of astrological phenomena. For what reason? For them to find hope, help, and succor. Isaiah says, God is greater. He reminds the children of Israel, his contemporaries, God is greater than all pagan gods combined. Just in case you have forgotten, Isaiah says. Well, there is no question. It is easier to praise, serve, and love God in good times rather than in challenging times. Challenging times indeed are a test of one's faith and trust in God. Isaiah's message is clear. God's promise has not changed because God is unchangeable. That it is the realization of God's kingdom's plan for worldwide sovereignty at Zion. There's no question about it. the plan of God could not be deterred, even in dire and complicated situations. First, we see that Isaiah draws their attention to God, the Creator. He says, "Have you not known? Have you not heard? Has it not been told you from the beginning? Have you not understood from the foundations of the earth that it is He who sits above the circle of the earth and its inhabitants are like grasshoppers? He stretches out the heavens like a curtain." Oh, that is beyond our comprehension. He stretches the heavens like a curtain. I'm sure that you have experienced stretching a curtain in your living room or in your bedroom. And can you imagine God stretching the heavens like a curtain and spreads them out like a tent to dwell? That is incomprehensible. But Isaiah is pointing to who God is, particularly to his contemporaries and those who were in exile. He continues by saying, "He brings princes to nothing because God is greater than kings and princes and their power and their authority. He makes the judges of the earth useless." Second, Isaiah points to creation again, particularly to the celestial body that is above all of us. "Lift up your eyes on high," he says, "and see who has created these things, who brings out their host by number, and he calls them all by name." Talking about the stars and what comprises the celestial body above us. "By the greatness of his might and the strength of his power, not one of them is missing." God is incomparable to other gods, Isaiah says. His wisdom and sovereignty and authority are immense. Isaiah is saying if you put all the gods together, they would not even equal to the God who chose you and who loves you. Thus, only Israel's God is worthy to be worshipped, for he created, controls, and preserves creation, and not one of them is missing. And then Isaiah continues to even more details that God created the stars would have been an awe-inspiring event, even in ancient Israel. Even this thought was awe-inspiring to them as it is to us. Where about 5,000 stars were visible at night. Astronomers estimate more than 400 billion stars in the Milky Way. Take note of that. 400 billion stars in the Milky Way. And there are 125 billion galaxies in the universe. 400 billion stars in a Milky Way and 125 billion galaxies in the universe. If we sum this up together, the total number of the stars is approximately 1 times 10 to the 22nd power. In other words, 10 billion trillions. Now, that is mind-boggling. And you know what God said? What Isaiah said, rather? God created all of this, the Holy One of Israel. And not only that, God calls all the stars by name, and not one of them is missing. Such a God, Isaiah says, will never forget even one of his people. If we think that God has forgotten them or forgotten us, it's quite impossible. Thirdly, Isaiah points to God's power and strength. Well, I wonder how old God is. Have you ever thought of it? Does God use a hearing aid? Does God use a cane? And so this is the words of Isaiah. Have you not known? Have you not heard? The everlasting God, the Lord, the creator of the ends of the earth, neither faints nor is weary. He doesn't get tired. His understanding is unsearchable. We cannot quite comprehend the ways of God. He gives power to the weak, and to those who have no might, he increases strength. Even the youth shall faint and be weary, and the young men shall utterly fall. But those who wait on the Lord shall renew their strength. And these who wait upon the Lord shall mount up with wings like eagles. They will run and not be weary. They shall walk and not faint. Youth depicts strength, while older ones depict wisdom. And God's strength surpasses the strength and the courage of the youth. God has established a time for making promises and a time for their fulfillment. This is the reward of those who put their trust and hope in God. And this is what Isaiah was saying. Isaiah points to Israel and to those in exile, to the promise of God. And the key word to the words of Isaiah and the prophecy of Isaiah is to those who wait upon the Lord. When we think of wait, what is the first thing that comes to mind? When you go to a restaurant, you have someone called a waiter. A waiter is someone that serves, but a waiter is someone that anticipates the need of the customers around the table. In biblical terms, to wait means to look for, to hope, to wait with expectantly. That means it's not simply waiting, but waiting with a sense of expectation. And the other meaning is to wait eagerly. And it says, to those who wait upon the promise of God. Now, remember Isaiah was talking to Israel and those who were in exile. Not only were they feel sorry for themselves, but in exile, they need to wait upon the Lord because God had promised. As I said a moment ago, there's a time when God makes promises and there's a time for its fulfillment. God knows the perfect time. And our responsibility and our toil, our vocation is to wait because he who promised will make sure that it is fulfilled in his right and proper time. And if you're one of those who are waiting, if you are like me, always waiting for God's promise to be fulfilled, that attitude of waiting, my brothers and sisters, when we put ourselves to that position of waiting for what God has promised, becomes the very source of our strength, knowing that God does not disappoint us. And so this is what Isaiah was telling the children of Israel, especially to those who were in exile. He said, don't lose hope. Remember, God has promised. And as you focus and gaze upon the promise of God and meditate upon the promise of God and always be reminded upon the promises of God, this is going to be the source of your strength. You're going to go through this with flying colors. You're not going to be disappointed. You don't have to turn to other gods because God is what has been described as such by Isaiah. And that is a great description because sometimes we forget. Sometimes the problems of life becomes bigger than the God that we have in our hearts. It cannot be, and we should not allow that to happen. So Isaiah tells the children of Israel, God is faithful. Keep waiting. Keep expecting. Don't lose hope. Now, in ending, I would like to share with you the difference between hope and optimism. Optimism is confidence about the future or the success of something. And as many people say, you know, there's always a light at the end of the tunnel. And you know, I I thought of it many times. And I think that is what optimism is all about. But when we compare it to hope, hope is more than wishful thinking. Hope is more than optimism. Hope is more than staying positive. You know what hope is? It's not the light at the end of the tunnel. It's the light in the midst of the tunnel, where there is darkness. That is a difference, my brothers and sisters, between optimism and hope. Because he who promised will fulfill it. And God shines and allows his light to shine where there is darkness. That is the difference between optimism and hope. We have to be optimistic, but hope takes us further. The promise of a faithful God is the very foundation of Christian hope. As I said in ending, allow me to share with you very quickly the words of Joseph, the dreamer, in Genesis chapter 50. This was a time when Jacob had died, and the brothers of Joseph were afraid of what he was going to do in revenge for what they had done to him. And you know what Joseph told them? You meant it for evil, and God turned it for good. What is this saying to us? Why are you throwing this in what you're sharing? It's because even though the children of Israel were in exile, even this bad thing is something that is happening to them, if they don't lose their hope and they wait upon God, God can even turn it for their benefit. And it's only the God that we serve that can do so. And that is what Christian hope is all about. As the psalmist says, I will lift up my eyes to the hills from where my help comes from. My help comes from the Lord, the maker of heaven and earth. My brothers and sisters, God rewards those who wait upon him. There is always a reward to Christian hope. Amen.